Hi, thank you for joining us today for this webinar on financial metrics for SaaS companies. Metrics for SaaS companies are in many ways more important than they are for on-premise, and we'll be looking through what most of the key things are that you need to be concerned about to make sure that you're managing your company on an ongoing basis. I've been working with ISVs for more than 20 years, helping them develop the right business strategy, the right go-to-market strategy for their technology. Over the years, I worked with mainframe companies, mid-range, client-server, ASP, and now the cloud. And so I see the business models and the technology as a continuum rather than the cloud being disruptive to everything that we've known before. It's really just as an extension of what you're doing. There are elements that are different, and we've been focusing on that for the last 4 or 5 years. We've been partnering with Microsoft for 8 years, but the last 4 or 5 really drilling down on the cloud and what the difference in the business model is. Trying to help companies transition, make that transition as smoothly as possible so they can remain to be profitable as they go from on-prem to the cloud. Just a reminder that this is part of a series of webinars. There's 6 in total. It's great if you're able to watch these sequentially, but if you're not, that's not absolutely critical. We've talked about the changing business operations, which were the key strategic decisions that you need to make as you move to the cloud. And we've looked at the target markets and then developing a sales and marketing strategy to reach those targets. In the last session, we looked at the pricing considerations. And then the last session that will come up next week, it'll be the legal issues that are specific to SaaS. Even though this is a taped presentation, I will be logging in for a live Q&A. So for those of you that are logging in, that are watching this real time, please feel free to stick around and ask questions, and I'll do my best to answer them at the end of this session. The agenda today, we'll talk about why metrics are important. Every business needs to look at metrics, but monitoring your metrics in a SaaS environment, really critical, much more critical than an on-premise. We'll look at what some of the main revenue metrics are. We're going to spend a little bit of time on churn because that's probably the most important variable to your business, managing, limiting the level of churn. We're going to look at customer acquisition costs. That actually represents your investment up front to bring a customer in, and what's known as the cash flow chasm. I think this is something that all of you are concerned about, is that, well, if we stop selling on-premise, what happens? Does our cash flow dry up, and how is that going to impact my business? So let's look at metrics, and they are much more important for a SaaS business. The good news, and this is what you hear from everybody that wants to push you into the cloud, the good news is that over time, the SaaS model builds up a strong stream of recurring and hopefully growing revenues, and that this is the key to the valuation of your company. This is the key to success. The not so good news, though, is that this doesn't happen overnight. You can't just turn the switch, go from selling on-premise to selling subscription and expect to be profitable the next day. There is a real impact on your cash flow. And that's why measuring those metrics and seeing what happens to your company is so important. Managing your cash flow is a big deal. If you're no longer collecting those big chunks of payments up front, but you're spending money on marketing and you're collecting your money over time, find out early if you're running into trouble. Look at what the signposts are. What are the danger signals? What are the red flags that you should be concerned about? And then metrics are also very important in terms of the valuation of your company. If you're sitting down with investors or someone that might be interested in buying your company, they are going to want to know that you have a good handle on what your key metrics are. That'll have a big impact on the value of your company. So what are the key metrics? We're going to look at the revenue metrics, churn, customer acquisition costs, and the cash flow chasm. These are the things that you want to measure. Revenue metrics. There are 4 key metrics that they use. MRR, monthly recurring revenues. This is the amount of money that you are collecting every month from your subscriptions that have already been signed up. So every month you measure, are my revenues going up and how much am I getting on a recurring basis? The ACV is the annual contract value. So as you're selling your solution, whether you're selling it month to month, or you're selling it on a 12-month contract, or you're selling it on a longer-term contract, the annual contract is the expected annual value of that relationship. So the total contract value is the value of the contract for the duration of the signed commitment. If the commitment is month to month, well, the total contract value is whatever they're paying that month. If it's a 12-month contract, the total contract value is 12 times the monthly fee. If it's a 3-year contract, then it's 36 times that monthly fee. The lifetime value is how long do you think the customer is going to stay in place, and how much money will you get from that relationship during that period of time? It's very important, a very big difference between a lifetime relationship of 3 years, 5 years, and 7 years. This is one of the things that investors look at, is how are you monetizing that initial investment in sales and marketing? How much is a relationship going to be worth over some period of time? So churn. I mentioned that churn is probably the most important, most critical variable and metric that you need to measure. What is it? Churn, essentially, that's when customers stop paying. So any customer that has signed up month to month or for longer term that stops paying, that's churn. It's the inverse of your renewal rate. So if 97% of your customers are renewing the contract on whatever the terms are, then you have a 3% churn rate. There are a number of ways that can be measured. It can be measured against your monthly recurring revenue and how much you're losing, and we'll talk about the impact on that in the next slide. It can be measured against your monthly bookings, or you can measure it by count, the number of actual customers that you have or the subscribers that drop off. So there's different ways of looking at the churn. But regardless of how you measure it, the impact of churn is significant. It's really important to manage that. So in this particular graphic, we're looking at the new customer bookings, is that little diagonal blue line up. And then the yellow and the red lines show the lost revenues that accumulate based on different levels of churn, 2.5% and 5%. So in this model, what they're using as the assumptions is that you start off with $10,000 in bookings in month one, and that your bookings every month grow by an additional $2,000. So in month two, you book $12,000. Month three, you book $14,000. And you have a continuous growth of an incremental $2,000 per month. And this is a 5-year model. And what you will see is that by year five, if your churn rate is 2.5%, which isn't that bad on paper, but if 2.5% of your customers don't renew, then the monthly revenue loss that you will build up is $64,000. If your churn rate is 5%, that monthly loss is $90,000. What that means is that by year five, you'll be making or collecting $90,000 less every month than you would have if you had a 0% churn. $90,000 a month is $1 million a year. How much time and effort do you have to put into sales and marketing to make up that $90,000? So how do you reduce churn? There are a number of ways of doing that. We'll look at the carrot and the stick approach. In the carrot approach, that's how do you make it attractive for your customers to stay on? Customer success. We've talked earlier about the importance of having hunters and farmers. And this is where farmers come in. They're the ones that manage the relationship. If you have a sales force built of hunters, all they care about is closing the deal and getting their commission. Very difficult to get hunters to focus on managing a relationship. Having customer success managers, however you want to call them, on an ongoing basis, really does have an impact on churn. Measure the customer engagement. How are they using the product? If you're collecting analytics on the use of your product, you'll know that they're using 5% of the product, 50% of the product. You'll know how often they log on, when they log off, when they run into trouble. Do whatever you can to measure in your customer base how often and how much they're using your product. Find out what makes your product sticky. What features are they using? Again, this is part of the analytics. If you find out that most of your customers are using 10% of the functionality, then that means that you can refocus your attention around that 10% functionality. Then selling more to existing customers. This is what's called negative churn. And I'll talk about this in the next slide, because if you can increase the usage, the revenues that you get from each customer, it offsets any losses that you get from your churn. So in this graph, the green line shows the additional revenue growth that you get from actually effectively getting 2.5% more revenue on average from your existing customers. This is measured against bookings, and this is measured against the monthly recurring revenues. So you can see that the impact of getting more revenues from existing customers more than offsets the loss and greatly accelerates your revenue growth compared to having a negative churn or having a churn of 2.5% or 5%. So if negative churn is such a great thing to have, how can you achieve that? First of all, getting more usage from existing customers. If you have a customer with 5 users and you're selling them storage, you're selling them bandwidth, have them use more of it, so you're getting more revenues per user, per customer. You move customers from one tier to another. If they started off with silver as a way to get started, you move that same customer from silver to gold. It means that they're going to be paying a higher price per user per month. You're driving more revenues from that relationship. Cross-sell other products or functionality. They sign up for one module, sell them a different module. Sell them a third module. Increase the functionality of your product and get people to pay for it. Again, these are just ways of getting more money from an existing customer. So how do you reduce churn? What are the ways that you can beat them into submission and make sure that they don't leave? You can sign up longer term contracts. And we're seeing this a lot across the board. We're seeing companies asking their customers to commit to at least 1 year. Lock in their data. This is just a way of punishing people that want to leave you, make it difficult for them to move their data. There's a very well-known Salesforce automation software that does that. If you want your data out of their CRM system, well, you might get 27 different files, and you have to piece it all together. That makes it almost impossible for someone to move from their application to somebody else. Or you can require a phone call. And this sounds really like that this is a great way to do it, that they can't just go online and or send an email. They actually have to call, because a lot of people are very reluctant to pick up the phone to cancel something. But what happens with that, though, is that they just measure and they record their dissatisfaction, and they go on Twitter, they go on Facebook, and they complain very loudly about what a lousy company you are. They may not terminate their subscription, but they will cause all kinds of damage. So you have to be very careful about locking people in and making it difficult. It goes against the philosophy of SaaS and the subscription models. People should be able to get on fairly easily, make it easy for them to get on, provide the maximum value, and ensure that they stay on. Okay, now we're going to talk about the customer acquisition costs, which are a very big part of the SaaS business model. This is what it costs you to get companies into the funnel and work them through the sales process. And for a lot of companies, this is something that is very underestimated. It's the biggest cause of death of startup companies that don't fully appreciate what they're investing up front in bringing a customer through the sales cycle all the way to a conclusion. It's really important to understand all of the components of the customer acquisition costs and to manage those components on an ongoing basis. The formula for this is that the customer acquisition costs are a function of the total costs divided by the total number of customers. And it's the total cost side of it that a lot of companies underestimate. They think only in terms of their direct marketing costs, the SEO, AdWords, whatever their direct spend is, banner ads and so on. But you have to add in all of the backroom operations as well. So it's the total of the sales, marketing, salaries, overhead. All of that has to be added in and measured against the number of customers to get a true value of what it actually costs you to onboard each new customer. That then has to be measured against the lifetime value of a client. And this is where you get the paradigm of you're making an investment up front in your customer acquisition costs, then you have to monetize the relationship to get a return on that investment. And there are a couple of ways of showing this. If you are spending too much money up front or not getting enough money on the back end in terms of the return, the monetization of the relationship, the model doesn't work. And the VC community has a couple of different ways of looking at it. These are just rules of thumb, but it'll give you an idea of what the order of magnitude is. So the customer acquisition cost should be less than one-third of the lifetime value of a customer. In the early days, you may not know what the lifetime value of the customer is. You'll just have to estimate what you think that will be. The inverse of that is that the customer acquisition cost should be no more than 12 months of revenues. So the assumption going into the model is that a customer will last for 3 years, and you shouldn't spend more than the first year's revenues to bring them on board. But even that is a big number when you think about it. You have to be prepared to spend one full year of revenue to go through the marketing and the sales just to bring them on board. That doesn't leave you much, doesn't leave you anything for your other operating costs. And that's why this is such a front-end loaded investment model. So we'll go through some of the details. This is a very busy slide, but what it does, it highlights all of the elements that impact both the customer acquisition cost and the monetization, how you get your return. So as you're looking at this, I'll highlight the key points. What you want to do is drive down the customer acquisition cost, because the lower the cost of bringing on a new customer is, the more return you get over time. And then you have to, once you have the client relationship in place, do whatever you can to drive additional revenues, more revenues from that relationship, to get a return on that upfront investment. So if we look at some of the things that drive the customer acquisition costs down, one of them is free trials, and we've talked about this a couple of times already. But free trials, along with the automation of the sales process, where you eliminate or reduce the level of human interaction in the sales process, will drive up your profitability. And then working through channels. Channels can be a lot of different things. They can be marketplaces, they can be resellers for more expensive solutions, they can be affiliates, referral partners, there's a lot of different ways. But to the extent that you can offload your own sales and marketing expenses on somebody else and let them absorb it, it improves your profitability. The number one thing that drives up your customer acquisition cost is your field sales. Anytime you have human intervention in the sales process, it will drive up your costs. So now let's look at the monetization. And we've already talked about this, but churn rate is going to be the key variable here. And reducing the churn rate is essential. The higher your churn rate, the lower your monetization, the lower your return on investment in that relationship. And then these elements are all about negative churn. It's recurring revenues, cross-selling, upselling, getting more revenues from your existing customers. So the customer acquisition cost is something that you need to measure on an ongoing basis from the very beginning of this process for you. So you look at how much does each cost lead. How are you generating your leads? Are you doing email blasts? Are you doing banner ads? Are you doing AdWords? Are you doing search engine optimization? What's the cost of bringing a lead to your website? And then measure the conversion rate. So if you're getting 10,000 leads, 1,000 leads to your website, what's the conversion rate as they go through the funnel? How many of those initial visitors become a qualified lead? How many of those qualified leads actually become a closed sale? And as you look at this and you start to see where you fail in the process or where you're not getting the right conversion rate, apply resources to improve the conversion rate at that stage in the funnel. And then look at the level of touch that's involved. Are you doing live chats? Are you getting live people on the sales force, on the sales call? Or is all of this automated? Now let's look at the sales cycle. This is from the VC community, but what they've done is they've established benchmarks for how long it should take to sell, on average, sell a solution at different price points. And this is based on the annual revenues that you will get from a client. But according to their metrics, and it's very difficult to hold to this, but a sale of $2,000 or where the relationship is only worth a couple of hundred dollars per month shouldn't take more than 14 days, all the way up to $100,000, which essentially becomes an enterprise sales process of 90 to 180 days, maybe longer if there are a lot of services involved. Now let's look at the cash flow chasm, and this is the big issue of where you are making the investment in your customer acquisition costs up front. You get the lifetime value over some period of time, and in between that, you end up with the cash flow chasm. So think about it. If you're covering your development costs up front, you're covering maybe a full year's revenues in your customer acquisition costs and your regular technical operations and overhead, you have a very big outlay up front before the revenues start to come in. That's the cash flow chasm. Look at this from another perspective. This is a model based on one salesperson. One salesperson bringing in a subscription of $3,500 and bringing in one subscription every month. And you can see what that cash gap is. And according to this model, this is just an example, but according to this model, it takes a salesperson 11 months before they are bringing in a level of revenues, a level of recurring revenues that exceeds their total cost to the organization. So by the time you add in a salesperson's fixed cost, variable compensation, marketing cost, overhead allocation, everything that goes into the cost for an FT, a full-time equivalent, it will take an average salesperson 11 months before they have built up a recurring revenue stream that exceeds their the outgo that you have for that particular salesperson. That's just to reach the break-even point. It takes them 23 months before they have, before the recurring revenues that they've built up actually cover all of those costs. So if you look at a salesperson as a cost center, they are accruing a loss every month that they're not bringing in as much as they cost to you as an organization. And it takes, at this run rate, it takes 23 months before they've actually made their money back. After that, it's all upside. Now, one way of eliminating that cash flow chasm is to get your customers to pay up front for 1 year. And this is really a strong trend in the industry. Most vendors are moving away from the month-to-month or monthly payments, and they're making it very attractive for their customers to make the decision to pay upfront. Even smaller applications, things like SurveyMonkey. If you look at SurveyMonkey, it costs $20 a month if you pay on an ongoing basis, but if you're willing to pay for 12 months upfront, it's $200. Now that's a pretty good return, so it makes it very compelling for someone to make make that spend of $200, saves themselves $40 over the course of the year. In the enterprise space, companies like the annual payments because they don't like to set up the monthly payment process. For the larger companies, it's not a cash flow issue, and you can go in and you can charge and have them pay 1 year up front. And that effectively eliminates that cash flow gap because you are getting enough money up front to cover the cost of that salesperson for that 11-month period where they are effectively an expense for you. So another really good way, if you're transitioning your business, another really good way to avoid that chasm, and we've talked about this before in the target markets, and that's to go after existing customers that are on maintenance and that are getting closer to the replacement cycle. Not the customers that have been using your on-premise product for a year or two, they still have to get a return on that investment. But if it's been 3, 4, 5 years since they bought the on-premise license and they're not really a candidate for re-upping and making that cash expenditure today, go after them and see if you can replace that maintenance stream with a SaaS license. And if you get that paid on an annual basis, you will make probably 2 times more in a cash basis for the SaaS subscription than you were for the maintenance. Now, very quickly, I want to talk to you again about the business modeling tool, the SaaS business modeling tool that Microsoft has put together. This is a benefit that's available exclusively to Microsoft partners. It is a comprehensive business modeling tool online that allows you to enter all of your assumptions on pricing, Azure consumption, customer segmentation, go-to-market strategies, all of the different ways that we've talked about of going to market, your technical operations cost, your churn rate. You can build in all of that, and it feeds into a 4-year monthly P&L. You can then play with the assumptions. You can change your pricing. You can change your churn rate. You can change your market segmentation. You can change your go-to-market strategies, and you can immediately see the impact on your profitability over the next 4 years. The tool is available through a 3-hour tutorial with the York Group. It is a fairly comprehensive model. It's not self-service, but during the 3 hours, we'll set you up with your own login. You can start feeding in your own data. We'll walk you through every element of the business model so you can focus on the things that are relevant to you. And at the end of the 3 hours, you'll have answers to all of the key questions that you have regarding your business model, and you'll have a business model that you can play with as you move forward. All you need to do is log on to our website. At the bottom right-hand corner, you'll see this graphic. Click through there, and it'll take you to the registration page. Again, just as a reminder, this is a series of webinars. This has been number 5 in a series of 6. The next one that we'll wrap up with is the legal issues. Would recommend that you go through these in the right sequence. They are built in a logical way, but it's not critical that you do so. Here's my contact information. Feel free to send me an email or give me a call if you have any questions that I can help you with. And now it's the QA. This is a live Q&A. I am also logged in with you, so if you are viewing this live, please feel free to fire away with your questions, and I'll do my best to answer them for you. And thank you very much for your time today.